Chicago Bullseye post-draft day episode of the Chicago Bullseye. From the feedback that I'm hearing from Twitter, from other podcasters that podcast that cover the Bulls, I think Fred and I today are going to have a very different tone to our podcast than a lot of podcasts out there. What do you think, Fred?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, Mark. I was attended the Doug Tonis draft party. Great event, fantastic. Great to see a lot of Bulls fans there. Unfortunately, you weren't able to make it, but you know, I was there in your stead, and I was shocked, man. There was probably, I'd say, 40 people, maybe 50. I might be off on the numbers, but I was the only member of the entire party who was happy with acquiring McBuckets, as he's going to be referred to going forward. I'm just kind of shocked about it because, I mean, this team is sorely in need of shooting. And that's one thing he does exceptionally well, better than anybody else, I think, in college basketball. We got one of the best shooters in the game, in my opinion. And in the next few years, he's going to prove it as far as when it comes to shooting and spreading the floor for Rose. But, you know, I know there are deficiencies with him. He's not, you know, exceptionally quick, et cetera. We can go over them ad nauseum, but it's hard to find a guy who shoots as well as he does. You know, we had one in Korver. Unfortunately, we let him go for, you know, nothing, basically. And this was a need that had to be addressed. And it was addressed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what people expected at, I mean, with our mid-tier, teen picks, actually late teen picks, 16 and 19, I mean, first of all, the guys that were there, the quality guys, were all young guys for the most part, guys that are only, you know, 19-year-old guys that wouldn't have played anyway. To get anybody where we were in the draft that you think could come in and actually contribute to the team next year, I think is a major plus. I mean, obviously Doug McDermott can shoot. He shot 44% from three last year, 52% overall. He averaged a whopping 26.7 points. I think he led the NCAA in scoring. He's one of the top scorers in NCAA history, which, I mean, whatever. I mean, the fact is, if a lot of guys stayed for 4 years, they could have been as well. But, you know, I mean, which is a rarity nowadays. But you got a guy that played for 4 years, coach's kid, who's, you know, knows how to work, is a disciplined player. And, I mean, if you get anybody, like I said, if he can come in next year and contribute, what else would you have gotten? I mean, you're talking about like Gary Harris. Gary Harris is 19 years old. I mean, is it realistic to think that he would have come in next year and contributed? I mean, Doug McDermott helps make guys like Mike Dunleavy expendable. You could have just gotten rid of the draft picks, I guess, and saved the cap space. But I think the Bulls have a bigger plan. I like that they're trying to round out the roster. And if they're trying to make a sign and trade happen, if they want to, it all still comes down to Carmelo Anthony. If you want to get Carmelo Anthony, you need to have as many assets on the team as possible to create the depth that's going to make this team successful. And I don't know why. I mean, look, this guy was the Naismith College Player of the Year. And I was looking today at other Naismith College Player of the Years. And I shared this with you, Fred. Did you take a look at this?
No, I did not. What did you email it to me?
I sent it to you via text. I think via text. But
yeah.
Here, let me just bring this up real quick. Name Smith. Here, tell me what your thoughts as I bring this up here.
Well, a few things. Number one, I did want to mention is, you know, I love Gary Harris. I love him. I think he's going to be a good player. He's not going to be a great player. I think he's going to be a good player. But he's nowhere near the shooter that McDermott is. He shot 35% from three in college last year. And I understand he was in the Big Ten where they played better defense than anywhere else in college basketball. But 35% from three is not going to translate in the NBA game. It's just not. Now, McDermott he played in the revised Big East, which basically is a Catholic league. There's some rock-solid teams in that league last year. It's not like he played against bum competition. Shot 45% from three. That's going to translate. He's not going to shoot that again in the NBA, but it's going to be, you know, he'll be a 40-plus, which is, you know, very good. He's going, he shot 49 and 48.6% in the two previous years. The guy can just shoot. It's a gift that he has, and it's extremely important for this team. When Derrick Rose is going to come back and there's going to be no holes, well, he's going to be a guy you can throw out there and start extending the defense. It's all about spacing in this game. You look at the teams that are succeeding, whether it's San Antonio, even in my opinion, even the Heat were hurt by the departure, you know, of some of their better three-point shooters last year. You have to have three-pointers to spread the floor to make the magic happen. It's a mandatory to have an offense that works now, and the Bulls didn't have it. So they addressed this, a big need here. Now you can move Dunleavy if need be to get Melo in. And I think that's, you know, that should be the game plan now. Do whatever it takes now to get Melo. And I like what we have going forward.
Fred, I want to remind everybody here, Doug McDermott was the Naismith College Player of the Year. He was the best player in college. And I want to read to you the list of the players. I'm just going to go up this list here. And pretty much every single player on this list was at least a rotation player. Everybody on this list, for the most part, only a few that weren't. So Doug McDermott last year, Trey Burke the year before, Anthony Davis, Jimmer Fredette, obviously not a rotation player, but let's go on. Evan Turner, Blake Griffin, Tyler Hansborough, Kevin Durant, J.J. Redick, Bogut, Jameer Nelson, T.J. Ford, not a rotation player. So we're back in 2003 right now. Through 2003, in the last 11 years, you've had two players that won that award that did not become rotation players. Jason Williams before that, Shane Battier, Kenyon Martin, Elton Brand, Antoine Jamison, Tim
Great
Duncan,
point.
Marcus Camby.
Yep.
I mean, every single one of these players, and let's just be honest, what do the two players that didn't become rotation players have in common? They were point guards. They were small, undersized point guards that were able to excel at the college level that couldn't excel at the NBA level. But Doug McDermott's not a point guard. He's a small forward. He's 6 foot, like 8.5. This guy, not only is he's not a one-dimensional shooter. He can shoot from many different angles.
Fadeaways,
not just a spot
exactly.
Up sugars. He has a fadeaway. He has a step back. He can do it. He can play a little bit in the post. He could be creative and around the basket. This is not like, now at the NBA level, how does that always translate? You don't know. Is he going to be able to be as effective when he's away, you know, inside 15 feet as he was in college? Maybe not, at least not at first. He's going to have to learn that part of it. But I do expect that he's going to come in right away and be able to contribute from, you know, at least being a long-range shooter the same way that he did in college. And to have a guy that can come off screens, that you know, doesn't just have to be a, you know, pick and pop type of guy, which a lot of the 3-point shooters we've had have been just role player guys that are just pick and pop type guys, can be a tremendous asset. And I mean, I just read the list, man. I mean, this guy he's got the credentials following him.
Yeah.
I don't know why people wouldn't be excited about him.
Mark, the last 3 years he's averaged 28 per game, 29 and 31. So you know, his sophomore year he averaged 28. Junior 29, 31 last year. And rebounding totals, in sophomore he averaged 10, 9.7 as a junior, and then he averaged 8.3 last year as a senior. Again, a little bit further out. I mean, this is a guy who plays a lot on the perimeter. He's pretty far, shoots a ton of threes, is far away from the basket, and his rebounding numbers are pretty rock solid. I don't see a lot of the negatives. I understand them. I understand them, and I'll give you an example of a Twitter, you know, back and forth I had with Sigmund Freud, who I at Butch Cassidy, who I enjoy chatting with. I agree with a lot of what he says, and he was very against the pick. Here's his responses to me. You know, basically I had a bunch of, you know, I love McD tweets, and his responses were, still no real front court help. No way McDermott can be a stretch four on either end on an even average defensive team. So right away, I disagree with him that he can't be a stretch four on the offensive end. I understand he might have some problems on the defensive end, but let's just forget that and keep on going forward with Sigmund Freud's tweets. Here's another tweet. He was a stretch four in college because he wasn't constantly going against lengthy, rangy defenders. One of his best skills, ability to post, will be done away with in the NBA because he's not long or strong enough. And while he can work the screen game, it's not a far stretch at all, kind of. He isn't quick enough to consistently separate himself from better defenders, whether it be at a three or a four. The tourney game against Baylor showed some of his offensive limitations. Watched every second of it. Was very unimpressed. Well, number one, you know, he had a bad game against Baylor, apparently. I didn't see that game, but you cannot judge a player by one bad game, number one.
But
I mean,
he was being completely – he was the best player on the floor. He was being completely hammered by their defense. That's not going to be the situation. I mean, he's going to have wide-open three-pointers in Chicago. That's what's going to happen.
But he's not going to be probably double-teamed. Let's just put it that way. Like, I'm sure he was in that game. Now, I disagree with him that he's not strong enough. Like, his post-game's going to go away. Not if they put a small forward on him. Not if you're going to guard him with a 6'6 small forward, 6'7 sophomore forward, put him in the post. And if he's guarded by a power forward, well, then bring him out. Put him on the three-point line. That's up to Tibbs to get this right. But, I mean, he's a mismatch. He can take small forwards in the post, and he can take power forwards outside, which is what I want. I want the best power forwards defensively, the best defensive power forwards who are guarding him. I want them away from the basket so Derek can get to the basket. That's what we need, and he fulfills that role. So if he's a 3 or 4 on the defensive end, hey, man, there's going to be problems. There's no doubt about it. He's not a great defensive player. I'm not going to argue that. But that's what you have Noah and Taj to do, is to clean up the mess. I'll say this again and again and again until finally someone believes me. Interior defense is far more important than perimeter defense. If he's going to be guarding threes on the perimeter, he's going to give up occasional drives. But as long as you have Taj and Noah on the back end to take care of it, you're fine. I mean, for God's sakes, look at the 2009 Orlando Magic. That team was filled with some of the worst defenders you could ever see or imagine. I guarantee you Doug McDermott is just as good a defender as any one of the bums on that 2009 Orlando Magic. But you had Dwight Howard up there to clean the mess, and he did a great job of it in that year. Thus, so it will be with the 2014-15 Chicago Bulls if Taj and Noah stay healthy. What say you, Mark?
I agree. I mean, we've seen for years now, we've had guys that, especially our, you know, token white guy three-point shooters, you know, Dunleavy, Korver before that, who weren't great defenders. And we were able to make up for it no problem with our front court. I mean, we've had one of the best defenses in the league year in, year out. You know, let's keep in mind, last season, our defense was still incredible after we traded our quote-unquote best defensive player in Lou Alding, or whatever, second best defensive player. Mike Dunleavy was starting last year.
Exactly.
He was freaking starting.
Exactly.
Yet our defense didn't falter.
And we got better. We got better. He was a better three-point shooter than Dang, and it actually helped to open up lanes for DJ and helped do a lot of good things. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I completely agree with you. At some point, I'm so sick of this defense wins championships. That's a bunch of crap. The best offensive team in the league won the last championship. Interior defense and three-point shooting wins championships and a
Absolutely.
Superstar. And a superstar slash superstar. So, you know, it takes a mixture. If we have to give up a little defense to get a lot better offensively, so be it. That's the way we're going to get better. I'm sick of these. We had the best. Did we not have a better team than Washington defensively? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Was Noah better than and every measurable statistic, was he better, you know, than...
Not in the series. Not in the series.
Well, maybe
not in the
series. Okay. Well, if you go by position, I'd still say that Butler's better than, you know, who was the equivalent in Washington?
Beal.
What's that?
Beal.
No, he wasn't Bradley Beal. Who was he guarding? It was... And the three on what's his name? God, I'm having a
Trevor Ariza?
Trevor Ariza. Who's better defensively? Butler or Ariza?
Butler.
There you go. We had him beat on almost every position, up and down. When Taj is better than anybody they brought off the bench defensively, and yet
Taj,
we got our
shoot.
Ass kicked. You know, Taj is a good shooter. He just doesn't have three-point shooting. He doesn't have distance. That's the
and
whole
we
key.
We needed distance, Fred. It's not just a scorer. We needed distance. And,
yeah.
First of all, there was nobody in the NCAA that shot better from the arc than Doug McDermott last year. And there was nobody that we had the chance to get that would have shot better from the arc than Doug McDermott did. And, I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, you're absolutely right. We needed to be able to space the floor. Not only do we need scoring, but we absolutely need guys that can spread the floor. And if anybody watched the finals, I mean, come on. I mean, you had deadly perimeter shooting from San Antonio. Even Miami, even though they got crushed in the finals, Miami was consistently getting beat, but yet Ray Allen would hit, you know, key shots that could have kept them in the game if other things had followed that kept the offense running. But you see with the Bulls, that the thing with three-point shooting, it can get you back into games, and it can stop momentum in an instant with a couple threes. And you saw it all the time with Korver. If another team gets going, you hit a three or two, your team can get going offensively again. We've never had, even Dunleavy, you know, Dunleavy played great last year for us. I thought he did about as good as he could, but Dunleavy's not an amazing three-point shooter. He's not an elite three-point shooter.
He wasn't
shooter.
Last year, that's for sure.
Exactly. He's a good three-point shooter.
He won
shooter.
One game. He got hot in one game, and he won it with three-point shooting. He won our only playoff game for us. So there's no doubt that it's important, and he actually won a playoff game four. So I was fine with Dunleavy, but overall during the year, to me, he was a little bit of a disappointment. He didn't shoot it over 40%. 40% is a magic number for three-point shooters. If you're over 40,
agreed,
you're doing a good job hitting the three. DJ Augustin was our best three-point shooter last year. He was fine, and he was great, actually. Those guys are key to spreading the floor for Rose, and it kind of disappointed me that a lot of people don't see this. It's another thing about McDermott, too, from what I've seen from him. He's able to – the fadeaway is a huge weapon. It adds basically height to you. If you can shoot that shot, if you can shoot the fadeaway, you're going to be successful against playing against taller players. It gives you an advantage. And he's got this, like, Dirk-ish step-back kind of fadeaway that I've seen many times. I think he's going to be able to score against guys that are 6'9", 6'10", guarding him. I think he'll even be able to do it in the post. I think he's going to be able to run a pick-and-roll with Rose well. My biggest question, I do agree with some people, is that is Tibbs going to play him? I mean, he's going to be so poor defensively that I could see him, you know, the one guy on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, it might have been, let's see my Twitter handle, who sent it over to me, Mitchell, I think, said that he's a 10-minute per game guy with his skill level on the defensive end. I don't think it's crazy. You know, I mean, Snell never played, he never plays rookies, even good defenders. Like,
yeah, but Snell was 19 years old, right? Or was he 20? I mean,
point.
Snell wasn't,
good point.
He wasn't 24. First of all, I don't know if you saw the press conference with Tibbs afterwards, but they asked Tibbs that specifically, and Tibbs said one of the reasons we targeted him is because we think that he's one of the most NBA-ready guys in the draft. We think that we know what we're getting. He's somebody that we scouted heavily. Apparently, John Paxson was out there in January, and he got stuck out in Iowa in a snowstorm, and he scouted him. He, like, stayed with the team for, like, a week and just watched him for a week play. And I mean, this is somebody they scouted heavily. Tibbs is saying that this is a guy they got him because this is somebody that they think can contribute next year.
Good.
So that's
good.
What Tibbs said. Tibbs said that. I'm not going
to argue. I agree too, but in order to contribute, he's got to be on the court and with an understanding that he's not going to be a great defensive player. Now, Tibbs, I know, also said, his quote was something in the effect of, I worked with him in USA Basketball, and I think he can be a very good defensive player, something to that effect. That's fine. You know, I don't believe that. I don't think he's ever going to be a great defensive player. I think you need to have couple God-given talents to be a great defensive player, quickness, agility, you know, stuff that he just doesn't have, explosiveness. But he does, I think he can be a great offensive player. I really do. And, that's what we need, man. That's what we need. So I know there's a lot of people that disagree with me that dislike this guy. Let's just try to give him a chance. Because I think that's something that we need to at least be open to, that, hey, this guy's going to hit shots for us and spread the floor for Rose, which is a huge thing. I will admit, you know, it almost happened. Adrian Payne was a guy I really wanted. And I would have been upset if Payne fell to 16. And, you know, we could have got Payne and maybe Harris out of this instead of – I would have preferred that to Doug. But he didn't fall there. He was picked by Atlanta. Payne was picked by Atlanta at 15. Great pick. He's a 42% three-point shooter last year as a big man. He's stretch four. I think he's going to be a good player. But I think that on the ceiling for McDermott is definitely higher than Payne's on the offensive end, although Payne will always be better defensively. And overall, I'm happy with this, but there's still work to do, man. We still got to finish this off by getting Melo. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And before we get to Melo, I just want to say, I don't know if we didn't get McDermott. Now, you make a good point with Payne. Fine. I mean, there's a couple guys maybe you could have made an argument for, but I looked at every single guard that was taken after him, that because obviously we didn't even have the 11th pick. We traded up to get it. But I looked at Zach LaVine. I looked at T.J. Warren. I looked at James Young. And I looked at Gary Harris.
All good,
and
not great. You know, that's the way I feel.
Every single one of them, none of them shot better than 35% from three in college, which means that none of them are going to probably be great NBA three-point shooters because obviously the line goes back and it's tougher competition. And one of them, I can't remember which one it was at this point, but one of them shot like 25% from three.
Really?
So, I mean, none of it was James Young, I think. I think it was James Young.
Yeah,
25%
that.
From three.
Yeah, you don't
so
need
it's
that.
Like, obviously, like, what else would you really what else would you rather have gotten? I do think that people in general, and I'm just going to say it. I mean, it's just, you know, when he compares himself to a guy like Wally Szczerbiak, I think Wally Szczerbiak's a guy that anybody would have loved to have had on their team or drafted with the 11th pick in the NBA draft. I mean, a guy that, you know, was in the NBA for a long time, contributed to a lot of teams, a lot of decent teams. He was on a lot of crappy teams, too. But he, you know, a good NBA player. I just feel that sometimes when you're a white shooter, people categorize you. And it's like, you know, there's for every Larry Bird, there's a million guys that don't make it. So it's like, it's tough to put them in a box. And then you think, well, is it worth with the 11th pick a Kyle Korver? Well, let's just be honest. I mean, like, even if he ends up being a Kyle Korver, if you're drafting outside of the top five, if I got a Kyle Korver, I'm more than happy. I mean, a guy that stays in the league for a long period of time and contributes to a lot of teams in a large way is a big contributor, a big role player, a key role player. What more do you want? He was the 11th pick in the NBA draft. What more do you want? This isn't going to be your big offseason splash.
Yeah, I agree. I thought they did pretty good, man. I think all those guys that you mentioned, I like them. You know, especially Harris. He's one guy I definitely did like, but he doesn't shoot the three. He's not going to, and he's not going to fulfill the need that we have. You know, Harris, I think, is kind of like a combo guard. He's going to be – another thing about Harris, too, he's not huge. He's like 6'4". I thought he was pretty light. To me, he looked like a slightly –
200 pounds.
Tall. Yeah, he's not a big guy. And, you know,
I'm 200 pounds. I'm 5'10". Yeah. I'm not 200 pounds. I'm in the range, man. I'm in the range.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't seen you in a while. I can only imagine. But it's so let's just give him a chance. But, you know, still, I think if the plan is to move Dunleavy now and then to get as much cap room available for, you know, to get Melo here, then I'm down with it. But they better go for it, man. I'm not sensing, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not sensing, like, if this is how we go into the season with just adding – you know, just saying Doug McDermott, I'm not going to be cool with that. I don't know how you feel.
Well, I feel like, look, let's see what they – first of all, if we don't get Carmelo Anthony, I'm not going to – if all the Bulls try – well, but it's – you know what? They got to be aggressive. I have to like their approach. I got to feel like they did the best that they could. You can't control where players go. But it sounds to me, everything that we hear, that that's what they're going to try to do. Now, yesterday with getting Doug McDermott, one of the things – I mean, they really wanted this guy because they gave up the two picks that they traded to get Doug McDermott saved them roughly only about $400,000. But they took on another contract in Anthony Randolph that you can't trade in a multiplayer deal. He makes $1.7 million. Now, Anthony Randolph could theoretically be, you know, a backup power forward. I mean, $1.7 million is nothing. And, I mean, it's something when you're talking about overall cap space. But the Bulls need to round out their roster anyway. So if he ends up just being, you know, your backup power forward – I guess I can live with it, but right now, if Carlos Boozer got amnesty today, you only have about $11 million in cap space. But obviously, I mean, you don't really see guys leave ever in just complete free agent signings. It's always a sign-in trade. It's always a sign-in trade. The team wants something in compensation anyway, and right now, Houston doesn't have the assets to sign them outright either. They said a report came out yesterday on Real GM that Houston has a trade on the table for Jeremy Lin, but they're waiting to hear what Carmelo and LeBron want to do before they pull the trigger. I'm calling bullshit on that because no team is going to sit there and say, oh, yeah, you know what, Houston? We want to make sure you guys are successful, so we're going to wait a week and a half. We're going to hold on to this deal, and we're going to guarantee you that if you want to do this a week and a half from now, we're going to give you the thumbs up. Houston is constantly throwing stuff out there in the media to try to make it seem like they got things going on. Now, they did unload Omer Asik, but I'm not surprised about that. Omer Asik is a starting center in this league. Now, he's an overpaid starting center for one season, but it is an expiring contract. And to a crappy team like New Orleans, where he fits in pretty well, he's the type of guy that you could lock up long-term after that for a contract that's reasonable. Jeremy Lin's not. He ended up not being the guy that people thought that he was after his, you know, after Lin's sanity. He is a crappy contract.
I don't think he's a terrible player, though, Mark. I don't think he was.
I watched
a lot of him last year. I think he gets a bad rap, like he's some kind of horrible player. He's a good player, Mark.
He's okay.
You're wrong.
He's not worth $15 million. I'd rather have Carlos Boozer.
How many more years did he sign for?
This is it, but it's $15
million. Yeah, but isn't it $8 million? It's only $8 million towards the cap.
Why would it be $8 million towards the cap?
It's the way the contract is structured, so I'm 99.9% certain that...
No. It wasn't. He was getting $8 million every year.
No, but the way it's structured is... It's only $8 million towards whoever takes him on. Same thing with Amir. Amir's contract that went over to when he went to New Orleans, it's only $8 million of that $15 million they have to pay him is going towards the cap. The other, they just have to pay out of their profits. Or, you know, it doesn't count towards the cap, which is exactly the same thing with Lin. So that's not bad for somebody taking him on.
I don't get that.
I don't get it either, but it's true. So, I mean, I don't understand it either. I mean, you got to get a cap expert on. But everybody I've talked to with knowledge of the cap has told me the same thing. If the Warriors are interested in bringing back Jeremy Lin, do you know how big that would be? You know, I understand why the Warriors want him for just marketing purposes alone. A huge Asian community there, and it'd be huge. He'd just be, and he's a good player. So I completely understand why.
He's okay. He averaged 12 points a game last year. He was their starting power point guard. I mean, he played, you know, game in and game out. Let's see what he was from three last year. He was 3-point percentage, 35%, career 34%, not very good.
Well, it's Heinrich. That's what Heinrich got last year. Go ahead.
Heinrich never made $15 million a year.
Yes,
he only got four assists a game last year. On a team where you had James Harden and Dwight Howard, he only got four assists a game last year. He's okay. I mean, I think he's okay.
Well, Lin made $5 million last year, Mark. Let's keep it straight. So the average of the contract is like $8 million, I think.
The average was fine, but it doesn't matter. Right now he's making whatever it is, $15 million. So you're still going to have to pay him $15 million.
Yeah, I think it. Yeah, I'm 99.9% sure, and I think everybody's on their head who's listening to this. Jeremy Lin's cap number is like $9 million. It's not ridiculous. It's not crazy. He can be moved. So the Bulls better get aggressive in clearing up space if you want a real, honest to goodness shot at signing Melo. You better have these deals, just like apparently they do, lined up. And once you talk to Melo, he says, "Yeah, I want to come to Chicago." You get rid of everything you need to give him a max deal. Everything.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, you always could do a sign-in trade. So, I mean, at the same time, do you hold on to the assets? I don't necessarily think you just have to have a deal at that last second. I mean, you could just be like, okay, you know, you make it work. You make the number. If Melo says he wants to come here, I think we'll be able to make it work, because I'm pretty sure I'd have to double-check the numbers right now. But, I mean, with a few small moves, we could put Melo in roughly the range of a max deal. Roughly the range, within a couple million. But then after the first year, you'd be able to give him whatever you'd want to, because we don't have the committed contracts after this year. So at the end of the day, I think we're going to be able to be a big player in it. I don't see why he'd want to go to Houston and play in the West, because even if you go to Houston, you're playing with James Harden.
That's a good point.
I don't see, are they going to go from being a first-round playoff exit team to a team that actually can compete in the West? I don't know. I mean, even with James Harden, you're talking about, you know, these guys all demand the ball. So, I mean, what, is his shots going to go? Is Carmelo not going to be able to be the same type of player he was because of James? I don't know if those two players necessarily work well together. And then you're hearing rumors of, well, they could trade James Harden for Carmelo Anthony. And it's like, well, why the hell would Carmelo want to go there then if they didn't have James Harden? Because then it's just him and Dwight Howard. So I'd rather play on the Bulls with Joakim Noah, who arguably was a better center last year in the East, where you probably have a team that's got just as much depth as the Houston Rockets. But you're in the East.
Yeah, exactly. You have a much easier road to a title. So if that's what this is about, if he wants to win and be challenging for a title, you got to be insane to go to the West. You really...
Dude, and Dwight Howard, man. Dwight Howard has shown that he is one of the most selfish players in the NBA. Dwight Howard doesn't want anybody else to be taking away from the spotlight of Dwight Howard. And you saw in the playoffs...
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with
that.
I don't understand this. I had the same conversation last night. I watched all of Game 5. Dwight Howard was freaking incredible in Game 5. He defensively and offensively, he carried the Houston Rockets, and they lost on a miracle shot. So, you could say that he's selfish and all this other stuff. I didn't see that. I understand people dislike him for whatever reason, but that's not how it went down against Portland. I mean, he wasn't the problem. That team is not a great defensive team on the perimeter, man. He's the only guy who's an A-plus defender. Do you agree? Beverly's the only other guy on the team that I think is a good. The coach sucks. Exactly. So what are you saying? I don't understand why people put him in the same category as other players, like he's a really bad guy. I just don't see it. Maybe I'm wrong.
My thing with Dwight Howard is that I don't think it's all his fault, but I thought it was very clear against Portland that the team had no identity, because there was at the beginning, they were moving the ball around and they were trying to get everybody involved, and it just wasn't working. So then they just started going into Dwight on every single play, and I can't remember which game it was. I think it was Game 2, where he came out of the gate and he was just incredible, and LaMarcus Aldridge still matched him up like point for point throughout the entire game. But even in that game, it was like, well, once he started getting going, nobody else could get going. And you've always seen, too, James Harden folds in the playoffs. Every single time.
To me, more of a problem than and Dwight Howard. I thought Harden played pretty poorly. And that whole series.
So what's their identity? What do they do? Well, that's my thing. They don't have an identity.
What identity? Mark, every one of those games went down to the wire. It wasn't like Portland killed them. I mean, every one of those games was a really good game. Lillard hits a miracle shot to win game five. If that doesn't happen, they go back to Houston, and all likelihood we're seeing game seven. So I don't think, like, come on, identity. Their identity is they're a really good team with a crappy coach, and they lost in a very close series against Portland. They're in the toughest
Portland,
conference.
Come on, man. That's a young team. That's a team that's not – Portland's not one of the NBA elite. I mean, they
got Aldridge and Lillard. I mean, those are two really darn good players. Matthews, you got Lopez at center. I mean, that's a good team.
But you have Howard and Harden. So it's like, I mean, wouldn't you have said going into last season that Howard and Harden, the combo of those two, is better than Lillard and Aldridge?
Absolutely.
Because now we're saying if that's, but in, they proved to probably not be as good as those as Lillard and Aldridge.
I watched every
Lillard
game.
Aldridge,
I don't think so. I watched every game in that series. I thought it was a toss about which team was better. I really do.
Oh, I didn't. Well, I mean, what?
And I didn't think Harden played well. I didn't think Harden played well at all in that series. I don't have the stats in front of me. I thought he sucked in the playoffs.
Isn't that two series in a row now that he hasn't played well? I think James Harden had like one good game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I believe the year before that he did poorly in the playoffs to actually change that.
But
note.
Apparently he's
he
the
had,
best
shooting
guard in basketball because he made, you know, he made the first team All NBA.
He had 37 points in game four. He only shot 13 for 35.
There you go.
I mean, he's a shucker, man.
You got him in front of me for the playoffs.
Yeah, I do.
What did
he
do?
So the last game of the series. So I'm looking. It's backwards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Game five. He shot 60%, 9 for 15, 34 points. But other than that, 6 for 19 in game one, 18 points. 13 for 35 in game two. 9 for 21 in game three. And then 5 for 15 in game four.
Here's what he shot in the playoffs. To me, I look at shooting percentages. 37.6 from the field. And 29% from three. He sucked.
What? Wait, I'm seeing a 40% field goal, 32% from three.
I'm looking at playoffs per game, 2013-14, Houston. Six games. I'm looking at it right here. He shot.
Didn't they only go one round?
37.6. Played six games. It says six games here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're only showing the last five. I'm looking at the last five. So it's not including game one. He sucked in game one.
He shot 37.6 from the field and 29% from three. He sucked. He was terrible. And you're right. The year before, he shot 39% from the field and 34% from three. He played terrible. It wasn't Howard's fault. No, what were Howard's numbers? They were incredible.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that team does need a clear identity. They don't have a good coach, so finding that identity is going to be even tougher. I think that
this identity crap is it's a bunch of crap. What you need is Harden to play better. That's all you need. There's your identity, whatever that means. It's an offensive juggernaut with one good defensive interior player and one good point guard defender. That's what they are. They're an offensive team with one elite defender. So you have to win. You have to have your best offensive player, arguably Harden, to play well, and he sucked. So that's why they lost. It had nothing to do with Dwight Howard. You want to hear Dwight Howard's numbers in the playoffs? You ready? 54% from the field, which is just incredible. 54% from the field. Insane. He had, let's see the games that he had, playoff totals. I mean, he averaged 26 points a game. 26 points and 13 points.
13, wait, I see 62. No, free throw. Sorry, you're right. Go on.
Yeah, there you go.
54%. Yeah, I mean,
he played well.
Fine. So then the identity of this team is pounded down to Dwight Howard. So where does Carmelo Anthony come in?
I don't know. I guess we got off topic there about the analytics.
Doesn't he fit better with a team like the Bulls, where our center was arguably as good as Dwight Howard last year throughout the season? Obviously, throughout the season, he was fourth in MVP voting. Dwight Howard was not, and he's a guy that moves the ball around. You would be able to be the premier offensive player, but the whole team wouldn't revolve around you. You'd be able to do creative things to make everyone else work around. I just think that we're a better fit for Carmelo Anthony. I think that we would be – there's no guarantee that if you go to Houston that you're going to be able to get out of that first round. Whereas with the Bulls, you're talking about – something I told my dad today. I was like, where he was telling me, it's like, does Carmelo – say Derrick Rose gets injured or something like that. Does Carmelo make that big of a difference? Well, here's my argument. The Bulls won, what, 44 games last year, 45 games? Last year, the team – was in no question as a team with – take Rose out of the equation. The team was better than the team was when Rose won MVP. That team won 60 games. So one player having an amazing season, an MVP-ish type season, a season comparable to every single season Carmelo has every single year, that team's going to go from 55, 60 wins, no problem. No problem, especially in the East. Because the team already, we were the best defensive team, we were up there, we were like top two, top three defensive teams. Our team couldn't score more than 92 points a game. If you change that point differential from like a plus 0.5 when you're keeping teams to 92, 93 points a game, say you could score 98 points a game, 99 points a game, which isn't a stretch if you've got a guy that can score 28 a night, that's a huge point differential at that point, and that's what makes winning teams. That point differential is a big stat, I feel. And if we, I mean, a little bit of scoring goes a very, very long way. We had nobody last year. Nobody. And we still competed to the point where, you know, we went up against a team that had offensive options in the playoffs. You're not going to be able to continue what we were doing earlier in the season. But put a guy like Carmelo on this team, and then you are getting Rose back. Rose is an X factor. And I'm willing to even look at Rose as an X factor in this. When I'm trying to say, hey, should Carmelo come here or not, I want to look at Rose as an X factor. Because if the X is good and he ends up being a good player again, not even the player, he doesn't need to be the Derrick Rose of before if you have Carmelo Anthony. He could be three quarters of that. He could be a different type of Derrick Rose. And this team's going to be incredible. But even if Derrick Rose doesn't come, if Rose gets injured again or something, the team should still be pretty good if they don't have to give up too much to get Carmelo Anthony.
Yep.
Should be very good. Should be competing in the East.
Yep. No, I agree. I absolutely agree, man. All right, hey, on that note, I have to throw it here, but please email
me. Give me your
thoughts.
Draft grade. Give me your draft grade.
I'd give it a B+. A B+. I would have liked it. You know what? I'm going to give it an A because this is the one guy. I wanted either him, Payne. You know, so I wanted Payne with the 19th or this guy. I mean, outside of, you know, one of them, the top nine, right, who we all agree are going to be – it was a loaded draft. And they got him. I wanted him, so I'd give it an A.
I'm going to give it a B only because we took on the salary of Anthony Randolph. But, I mean, obviously that was a condition of us being able to move up in the draft. I've seen a lot of mixed grades. I've seen newspapers give us A's. I saw one guy on ESPN give us a D. You know, time is going to tell on this one. But what I will say, every year you see the Bulls sit on their thumbs in the draft, and they end up, you know, they draft pretty well. But you don't see them being too aggressive. This is somebody they targeted for a long period of time, and they got him. And, I mean, it wasn't – you know, he was quite a bit up from the 16th pick. So, I mean, and he could have gone even higher. So the fact that they were aggressive, they made the move, and they got the guy that they wanted, B. And if he ends up being, you know, the guy that – if he ends up being a difference maker on this team, then, you know, time will tell. This could be an A-plus deal.
Amen.
But on that note –
yeah, hold on a second. Send us your thoughts, ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at CBEFred. Yeah, until the next time, go ahead, brother.
Good day, both.
Good day, basketball.
Amen. God bless.